In town, the rising cost of youth sports and the toll on today's families. Its author, Mark Hyman, is a longtime sports writer and professor of sports management. And Hyman says he himself is Exhibit A when it comes to overspending on his own son's athletics. That's partly why he wrote the book, he says, to uncover what he calls the youth sports industrial complex, which, although often well-intentioned, does encourage families to open up their wallets wider than necessary just to keep Johnny or Jane happy on the playing field. And Hyman says this budget-busting trend is not just bad for family finances, it also makes kids themselves cynical. While told that athletic success is about talent and hard work, today kids see it as also about who can afford that special coach, the special camp, or the special travel team, and who can't. Today in The Exchange, author Mark Hyman on the high cost of youth sports. Let's hear from you. Have you found yourself overspending on your kids' athletics? And how do you define overspending? Is it worth it if they're having fun and staying fit? And where do you draw the line between what's reasonable and what isn't? Give us a call. We'd love to hear your stories and thoughts at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. And Mark Hyman joins us from Baltimore. And Mark, good to have you. Thank you very much for giving us your time today.
Laura, thank you for having me on the show.
Well, there's a great story in the book about how you got started with this project, and you describe how you sent out this email through a group you have been affiliated with called the Positive Coaching Alliance, asking parents to fill out a survey about their feelings on youth sports, especially the financial investment. And you thought you'd get, 25, 30 responses. Turned out, Mark, it was way more than that. Tell us what happened.
Well, I sent out the survey. First, I crafted 10 questions that I thought really captured some of the big issues in youth sports, and particularly dealt with the business of youth sports, that aspect, and the spending that families are doing. And sent it out, as you say, Laura, expecting maybe 20 responses. That would have satisfied me. But within a couple of hours, I had several hundred. And the responses were very interesting and in some ways surprising. And I would say that the primary kind of thrust of most of the answers reflected a great ambivalence about the way youth sports are kind of in some ways taking over our pocketbooks and our wallets. Parents spending in ways that they hadn't expected to spend and that they weren't really clear were advancing the interests of their kids.
That's the ambivalence. Get a little more into that, if you could, Mark. This feeling, which you experienced yourself, that, it does feel like too much. On the other hand, it's so positive for, Jane or Johnny. Describe that ambivalence a little bit more, please.
Well, I think one really important example is this phenomenon that I refer to in the book as the youth sports tourism industry, which is kind of a strange concept, but it's very real. And I think probably many of your listeners are familiar with travel tournaments, and their children are participating in tournaments that take them away from home many weekends during the year, particularly during the summer. And I spoke, as a result of the survey, I spoke with a family in Santa Barbara, California, and their son was playing travel baseball, and they loved travel. They loved baseball. The sport was doing wonderful things for their son, and they were very supportive of him playing baseball. But he was on a team in which the coaches were very insistent that the kids travel great distances to play in tournaments. And the particular summer that I was doing the reporting, they traveled to Colorado Springs, Colorado from California, and also to Cooperstown, New York.
Wow,
from
that's a
California.
Stretch. Right.
So, really substantial investment in those trips. And Sherry McKinney, the mom whom I interviewed for the book, said, this was very difficult because on the one hand, the coaches really wanted the kids to participate. It was almost considered a condition of being part of the team. On the other hand, her son played just a handful of innings in these tournaments, didn't play well when he was there. They'd spent so much money and time getting to these venues. So she had very mixed feelings about the extent to which she wanted her kid to continue playing at this level. It just didn't make sense to her.
Well, and the mixed feelings, you know, when you talk about how parents feel pressured to, you know, get the latest equipment or be on the travel team or send their kid to the special camp and so forth. But what about parents' own role in this? I mean, no one's forcing them to spend all this time and money. You write that despite the anger and frustration that parents feel, quote, most parents seem committed to keeping their kids in the game no matter what the cost. So parents kind of need to look in the mirror, right, Mark, on this? I mean, what did they say about their own role?
Well, yeah, I think there's certainly an element of that. And you know, virtually all of the things that I write about in the book, they're not inherently bad for your kid. I think the real issue is what our expectations are as parents out of sports for our kids. And in my reporting and in my private life as a dad and a coach, my experience has been that the parents whose ambitions, whose expectations of sports are for things like to teach their kids sportsmanship, to be part of a team, to be with their friends, to have fun. When parents are focused on those values, typically their kids have great experiences in sports. And some of those kids do go on to play varsity sports in high school and college. Those families, I think, have it right. On the other hand, the families who are more focused on these long-term goals that are largely, reserved for a very small percentage of kids, college scholarships, qualifying for the Olympics. You know, we have the Olympic trials going on right now, and you see kids competing at that level, playing center field for the Red Sox. When those goals become very real to parents and their decisions are motivated and shaped by those very ambitious goals, those kids tend not to have that good of experience, and the parents tend to spend on things. We're very vulnerable to making decisions in terms of how we're spending on our kids' sports lives that are quite suspect, I think.
Well, there's a keep up with the Joneses element too, right?
Well, no question. I mean, one chapter in the book is about sports training for babies. I'm not kidding.
I remember that chapter. Go ahead, yeah.
I mean, there are companies who have identified this niche that is about, aimed at children under the age of one and introducing those children, if that's the right word, to sports and giving the parents some sense that they are giving their child a leg up. Because their child is getting this orientation into organized sports before other children. So this goes to the point that you've raised, which is that I think we're all vulnerable to this mindset that we have to get our kids started early, and if we don't, somebody's kid down the block is having that experience, and maybe they're going to be a little bit ahead of my kid when they're 4 or 5 years old. And there's nothing really to support that scientifically. But I think as parents, we're vulnerable to that kind of mindset.
So there's no scientific rationale for having babies practice dribbling soccer balls?
No, in this chapter, in addition to talking to the entrepreneurs, I talked to a number of physicians, sports medicine experts and pediatricians, and they all say, before the age of 5 or 6, it might be a fine socialization experience to take your kid to a gym or show them, to have them swinging a plastic bat at a ball. But in terms of advancing their skills in a particular sport, waste of time.
Our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the exchange, Mark Hyman is with us, longtime sports journalist and professor who writes often about the business of sports and the role of adults in youth sports. His new book that we're talking about today is called The Most Expensive Game in Town, The Rising Cost of Youth Sports and the Toll on Today's Families. His earlier book was called Until It Hurts. His forthcoming book this fall is about concussions. Join us with your questions and comments at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email if you'd like. theexchange@nhpr.org is the address. Tell us about your own experiences with youth sports and what you think about Mark Hyman's position that too many American families are overspending on this. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. And one more question for you, Mark, on this. You call yourself Exhibit A in this overspending, keeping up with the Joneses, whatever it is. Perhaps going overboard with one of your son's baseball abilities. What did you do?
Well, I would say conservatively, Laura, that I've made, 93% of the mistakes that I've written about in these books. I'm giving myself the benefit of the doubt.
On that last 7%.
If I'm pointing a finger at anybody, it's mostly at myself. And my son is such a wonderful or unfortunate example of that. He was, a very fine little youth league baseball player. And when he pitched, we usually won. And I was the coach, and I liked to win. So as much as was possible within the rules, he pitched. And there were just a series of warning signs along the way that should have alerted me to the fact that that was really not in his interest. And he ended up having a series of minor shoulder and elbow injuries as a child. And then at age 18, as a high school player, ended up rupturing a ligament in his elbow and requiring an operation that we read about on the sports pages called Tommy John surgery. One of the messages I like to share with parents is out of this experience, which is, we think and we deeply want to advance the sports lives of our kids. We want them to be the best athletes they can be. And in our haste to do that, sometimes we're just throwing up obstacles. We're preventing them from becoming the best they can be. And we do that because we're in such a hurry. We're having so much fun watching them excel that it's difficult to remember that this is a long-term process.
Well, we will talk more after a short break and start taking your calls, 1-800-892-6477. Coming up, more with Mark Hyman on his book, The Most Expensive Game in Town. Let's hear your stories, experiences, and questions at 1-800-892-6477.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and more on big spending for youth sports on the Exchange on NHPR, then at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, what the Affordable Care Act will mean for you. New Hampshire weather for today, turning partly sunny with a chance of an isolated shower or thunderstorm. Today's highs, 80 to 85 degrees. Then tonight, partly cloudy, lows from 50 degrees in Coos County, ranging to around 60 degrees along the Massachusetts border. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. In Concord Motorsport, Route 4 Chichester Automotive Service for many makes and models for 37 years, utilizing computerized diagnostic technology. Online at concordmotorsport.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the impact of youth sports on family budgets and why one author says it's gotten out of control. We're talking this hour with Mark Hyman, longtime sports journalist, professor of sports management. His new book is called The Most Expensive Game in Town, The Rising Cost of Youth Sports and the Toll on Today's Families. His earlier book was called Until It Hurts, and it's about injuries among young athletes. Join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. We'd love to hear your stories, times when you found yourself overspending on your kids' athletics, also how you define overspending. Perhaps it's worth it if your kids are staying fit and having a lot of fun. And also the idea of, can you really blame youth sports companies for overspending? What role do parents play here in holding the line? All in all, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And Mark, lots of calls. Let's go to Rosemarie in Belmont first. Hi, Rosemarie. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi. I run a small figure skating club. We're associated with U.S. Figure Skating in the Winnesquam, Franklin area, which is not... They're not two of the wealthiest districts in New Hampshire, but figure skating can be a very expensive competitive sport. Where we are in New Hampshire, it's really important for us to keep tuition affordable to allow as many people to participate and benefit from the sport. And we put this mission, this is our mission, we put it on our website, we put it on all of our literature, and it really makes a difference in the atmosphere to welcome everyone into the sport. My kids are going to go to college with figure skating on their resume as well-rounded applicants, but not as figure skaters. It's not going to get them into college.
So you're not aiming for the Olympics here, Rosemarie.
Well, not that's the thing. If you want to do that, you've got to move down to the Skating Club of Boston. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't provide an outlet for everyone to participate and gain the benefits of any particular sport.
And how do you keep it affordable, Rosemary? Are you a nonprofit or just a business trying to really keep it, as you say, affordable?
We are a nonprofit, mm-hmm. And we have had a nonprofit rate. We also really work hard, because we know there's a huge burden on families, to not do a lot of fundraising. Kids do that all the time for school and for all their other activities. We work really hard to keep our costs low and to negotiate our ice price, which can be really expensive. And we do a couple of small fundraisers, but not a lot of pressure. And we work hard with our families to create a good environment.
All right. Well, Rosemary, thank you very much for calling. Couple points she brings up. One of the biggest ones, I think, Mark, is she tries to keep it affordable. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that's so important, Laura. In our day, or at least in my day, youth sports was really, cost was not an issue. And the more affluent families in town and the families that had more modest economic circumstances, those kids were playing on the same teams in the neighborhood. That was the typical experience. Now, you've had the rise of travel teams and so forth, and there is kind of a split where the kids at the top end of the economic scale are having a very different experience from those who, in some cases, have no access to sports at all. I mean, kids who are living in inner cities and environments where there are no organized leagues, their parents can't afford to sign them up for the travel teams. So that's a big problem. There are lots of kids who are left out entirely. And as Rosemary explained her program, that's the kind of program we need, that where kids from all economic backgrounds are welcome and able to participate together.
You know, Rosemary, thanks a lot for calling in with that. And again, our number 1-800-892-6477. You know, before we go to another call, Mark, let's dig into that history that you just mentioned. You do write that it wasn't always like this, that as close back as the 1970s, most kids played sports either with groups of other kids on the block or, as you said, in town rec department leagues where everybody was in together. There weren't high-priced camps or travel leagues or special leagues and so forth. So what happened?
Well, I think a lot of this goes back to public policy and the way that we've chosen to fund or defund sports for kids. In those days, there was money available in communities for youth leagues, for rec centers, for rec counselors who worked at these centers and supervised kids, and that's pretty much gone away. So in place of that, you have the burden for paying for youth sports experiences falling to the parents. And the parents who are in a position to pay are doing that, as you would expect, and giving their kids the best of everything. And those kids certainly have everything they need to have a great experience. The kids on the lower end of the economic spectrum, they often don't. And, we hear a lot about the childhood obesity crisis in the United States, which I think is very real. And in part, that's a function of the fact that there are many kids who are not playing organized youth sports at all. And the reason is quite simple. They can't play in their neighborhoods anymore because there really are no organized programs for them to participate in.
Now, town budgets are always tight. So the counterargument to that, Mark, would be, look, I'm already paying through the nose with my property taxes. Why should I also pay taxes so that your kids can play baseball? That's the flip side of it.
Yeah, I think that's valid. But I think the long-term perspective would be, the health benefits of sports. Look, I think youth sports are fantastic, and I'm a great advocate of full participation in youth sports. I think all kids should play. And ideally, kids would get in the habit that would keep them active throughout their lives. I think that should be one of our primary goals as parents and educators and people living, politicians. That's one of the primary focuses and functions of youth sports. And we're getting away from that. We're getting more into a model where many people's aspirations is to raise, a college athlete. And that's not going to happen for everyone. I mean, 5% of varsity high school athletes end up playing at all in college. 5%. So, it seems to me that our system should be designed to serve the interests of those 95% of kids who just want to be active and with their friends and learning new skills. I mean, that to me is what youth sports is really all about.
Our phone number again is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Mark, let's go next to Jack in Manchester. Hi, Jack. Thanks for hanging on. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. I heard the discussion about, you know, the folly of trying to designate a kid in nursery school as the next center fielder for the Red Sox or linebacker for Notre Dame. And it kind of resonated with me because I kind of went through the opposite experience. I did not develop an interest in athletic games until I was almost 12. And when I took up baseball, I discovered early on that the scale of my ineptitude was extraordinary. And I later branched out into football. And when I heard my football coach say, the reflexes are shot, Kenny, I was not yet 16 years old. So I'm just wondering, I was also nearsighted and I couldn't do anything about that, but I'm just wondering if not trying to develop those skills at an earlier age contributed to, let's say, a lack of hand-eye coordination and maybe slow reflexes later on.
That's interesting, Jack. So a little concern that maybe you should have gotten involved in youth sports earlier, is that what you're saying?
Oh, I always thought that, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, thanks for calling in. What do you think, Mark?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the age of entry in youth sports has really changed over the years. When I was a kid, it was typical for kids to start at age 9. And if your dad, because it was always a dad, never a mom, but if your dad was a coach, then you could start at age 8. And that's almost mid-career now for a youth sports athlete.
Come on, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's very typical for kids to start at 4 or 5, and I've written about an organization, a national soccer organization that starts kids at 18 months in an organized program. I think our tendency is to start kids as early as we possibly can. And if you talk to educators and people in the medical community, they will typically tell you that, again, before the age of 6 or 7, there's really no benefit in terms of coaching a kid up in a particular sport. So I think the best advice is at age 6 or 7, introduce your child to multiple sports. Let them kind of introduce them to many, and then let them take the lead and decide which ones really are the most fun for them. And the kids who do that, typically they identify one or two that really are the most fun for them. And those kids are on their way. Then you can kind of take a step back and enjoy the ride.
What about Jack's question, though? He's always regretting that he didn't start earlier.
Well, I think there is some benefit to being introduced to a sport at age 7 or 8 or 9, particularly a sport like baseball. If you wait until 12 or 13, it's very difficult to catch up. And I think that was kind of at the crux of Jack's question. Yes, I think that you do reach a point where if your child has not been exposed to a particular sport, that can serve as a handicap. What I think is important to talk about is, does your child have to be competing at the highest competitive level at those ages? Because you do have to make that choice as a parent. Are you going to enroll your kid in a neighborhood rec program where they're going to be playing the sport, but playing against primarily their neighbors? Or are you going to seek out a travel program where your kid is going to be traveling around the state and sometimes the country, playing maybe 60 or 70 games during a season at the highest competitive level? Is that in your child's interest? And if so, why are you making that decision? It's ripe for some children, no doubt. But I think that's a process that every parent has to go through. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are can relate to that, because it's a decision that many parents have to make at some point in a child's sports life.
Well, Jack, thank you for joining us. And you can join us as well at 1-800-892-6477. Have you found yourself overspending on your kids' athletics? How do you define overspending? Where do you draw the line between what's reasonable, what's having the kids have fun, helping them stay fit? So what feels reasonable to you and what doesn't? And also, what role do parents play here in holding the line on spending? Where do you jump in and say, no, you can't do that? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. 1-800-892-6477. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And let's go next to Milford. Dan's on the air. Hi, Dan. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'll try and make a few points. This is very near and dear to my heart. I've been involved in developing a soccer program here in Milford for a while now, so I've been kind of on the front lines of things. And you get a lot of pressure from the parents pretty much right off the bat of trying to pull out the select kids or so-called select kids and pushing them and pushing them and pushing them. And it's tough to step back and tell these parents that, like your guest is saying, that your child is not going to probably get a college scholarship. So I make my point to try and just make it fun for the kids and tell everybody on my committee that it's a numbers game. Because what I've also found is that we also have a baseball program in our town, and they're suffering numbers-wise because they've gone down the road of select teams and pulling kids out and shutting other kids out from playing baseball, whereas our numbers have grown. And I think it's just because we accept everybody and we keep the cost affordable. I find it ridiculous for soccer especially, where the equipment is so limited as far as all you need is a ball, a couple goals, and some shin pads and cleats, and, you know, a bunch of kids, and you can play. So the excuse sometimes is, well, we need to push, and it's got to cost more money, and, you know, all this stuff. And I try to keep it very, very simple, try and get everybody involved, because I also believe that we're losing these kids, and they're going to other sports, or they're not playing at all because they don't think they can do it. And just a quick point on your last call, I also think that he may be right with not trying sports early enough and coming to the game too late, but I also don't think you need to be involved in, say, a set sport. You just need to be active, and I think what you find is a lot of these kids, because it's not like the old days when I was growing up where you could just pick up basketball in the neighborhood and just play and run, a lot of these kids are sedentary. So when they do come out at 8 or 9, you know, they might not have been necessarily moving around a lot.
Mm,
so you end up with, you know, kids. So it's almost like these young programs, I try to focus. We have a U6 program, you know, for 4 and 5 year olds, but the focus of it is just balance, agility, movement, and having fun. And just getting the kids out there, you know, jumping
Dan,
and
ask
moving.
A quick question. Yeah, you say you have a Milford soccer program. Is it a nonprofit? Is it a rec department? Is it a private program?
For all technical purposes, it's a rec program.
Mm-hmm.
We don't make any money. We're nonprofit. But it's a rec program. And in the spring, we do our travel teams for soccer, but we don't technically make cuts unless I can't find a coach to coach a team.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. And I'm going to let you go, Dan. This is great, but I want to hear from Mark Hyman on this as well. What do you think, Mark?
Well, you know, Dan makes a lot of good points, but I think the point that I think is most important is this idea that your child can benefit in many ways, competitively and otherwise, playing in their neighborhood with their friends, you know, and not having, you know, not going 300 miles to a travel tournament. I think sometimes we lose sight of that. We think that if we're not, you know, buying the best, if we're not attending the most tournaments in a particular season, that somehow our children are at a competitive disadvantage. And I think we've kind of been sold a bill of goods on that, because there are lots of companies and individuals who have an economic stake in us believing that. And as I say, there's a chapter in the book about this whole phenomenon of sports travel for kids. And what is quite evident, I think, is that over the years, there are many communities who have kind of created, this is part of their economy. There are hotels in their economy, in their communities. There are promoters who are promoting individual events. It's in their interest to create lots of opportunities for your kids to travel. So that's fine. There's nothing, you know, dishonorable about that. But, you know, as opposed to going to one or two tournaments per season, now there's an opportunity to go to 9 or 10. And one of the families I spoke to in the book, it was a girls' softball team from Louisiana. The girls were 7 and 8 years old.
when I caught up with them at the end of July, they'd already been on the road for 11 weekends.
Wow. Wow. And, so much for hanging out, huh?
Exactly. So,
yeah, Mark, I got a quick question for you, though. Let me just jump in here on something you said that piqued my interest. You said, you know, it's important for parents to keep in mind that your child can play in their neighborhoods, playing with their friends, you know, in just a kid pickup game, not a 300-mile-away tournament. Easier said than done in some cases. Families are smaller, so there just aren't as many kids around to play with as perhaps when we were younger. Also, a lot of kids are in organized activities, including youth sports. So, you know, the example I'll give is my own kids don't dig soccer. Can't get them interested. They just don't like it. And in the fall, you know, on the weekends, they really have no one to play with because everybody else is playing soccer. So it's one thing to say, yeah, let your kid go outside and play with the other kids, but A, there may not be any other kids to play with, or B, all the other kids are playing organized sports. So,
well, Laura, the point that I'm simply making is that for many families, there's a choice between a rec program in the community or a travel or a select team that's traveling around the state and playing at a much higher competitive level. And I think reflexively, we often reach the judgment that more competitive team is the way our child should go. And I'm simply asking parents to keep an open mind and to recognize that there are lots of advantages to that program that's closer to home. It may not be quite as competitive, but there's so many other things your kid can benefit from playing close to home with friends with a nurturing coach, and learning to love the sport, which is really the most important thing.
All right. Well, Dan, thank you for calling. And we will take a lot more of your calls after a short break. You can join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org.
I'm Amanda Loader, NHPR's State Impact Reporter. Join me as I travel around New Hampshire and find out how folks are handling the economic recovery and the role they think government should play.
How am I going to pay for health insurance for my employees and myself? That's my job. I'm not going to expect anyone else to figure it out for me.
We'll also look at how the real estate market, demographics, and other elements are affecting businesses in every region of the state. Tune in to Morning Edition Tuesdays this summer on NHPR and at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Parker's Marketplace on Main Street in downtown Littleton, featuring dining and shopping under one roof, including the Italian Oasis Restaurant and Brew Pub, serving lunch and dinner. And from Dartmouth Hitchcock, providing online health tools and podcasts for healthier New Hampshire. Information at dartmouthhitchcock.org. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the high cost of youth sports. Our guest is Mark Hyman, longtime sports journalist, professor who writes often about the business of sports and the role of adults in youth sports. His new book that we're looking at is called The Most Expensive Game in Town, The Rising Cost of Youth Sports and the Toll on Today's Families. His earlier book was called Until It Hurts. His forthcoming book, he's co-author of that one, is coming out this fall. It's about concussions in youth sports. You can join us with your questions or comments about this idea that many families today are busting their budgets when it comes to their children's athletics. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. And Mark, let's go right back to our callers. And Cheryl is calling from Acworth. Hi, Cheryl, go ahead.
Hi,
you're on the air. Yeah, welcome.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to mention a sport that my daughter was involved in that most people don't think of as a sport, and that was competitive cheerleading.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter started in sixth grade, and by the time she was a senior in high school, her team had won several national championships. It was really expensive because they did have to travel to Florida, to New York City, to Ohio for competitions. But I really think that, in order to be on the team, she had to keep her grades up, and that was probably the number one factor in getting her through high school.
Wow. So she loved that cheerleading team, Cheryl,
yep.
And she kept her grades up so she could stay on it.
Yeah, and, you know, she couldn't get up in the morning to go to school at 7:30, but if she was going to an away competition, she was up at 4 o'clock packing her suitcase.
Funny how that happens. So, Cheryl, just real broadly then, what are your thoughts on this conversation that we're having with our guest Mark Hyman on the cost of youth sports?
Oh, dear.
Is it that it's worth it because it's, you know, motivating and positive?
Yes, it was definitely worth it for our family. Thank goodness our cheerleading team did a lot of fundraisers, so there was a procedure if you couldn't sort of fund your own kids' travel, that there was fundraising money that went into a pot that supported the whole team's travel.
All right. Well, Cheryl, good to hear from you. And again, Mark, you're not saying don't do this, parents, but just keep an eye on what the costs are. Go ahead, your thoughts on Cheryl's point.
Yeah, Laura, that's important. There are no bright lines. You know, oftentimes people are looking for very prescriptive advice. You know, should I take my kid to a private soccer lesson, or should I go on this travel trip? And if only it were that easy for us as parents. But it really isn't. I mean, some of these opportunities to spend money are great, and you should take advantage of them. But to me, the most important kind of perspective on this is to say, think about what it is that you want for your kid to be getting out of this experience. And if it's about these very attainable and valuable lessons in sportsmanship and being with friends and being active throughout your life, if that's what's behind it, your kid is going to have a fine experience in sports. It's when we get focused on these other goals, these more these goals are less attainable, meaning a college scholarship or something even beyond that. That's when I think we start spending in ways that are kind of screwy.
You know, when you talk about what you call the rising cost of youth sports and the toll on today's families, are you talking only economics, Mark, or are you also talking about time, family time, hangout time, time for kids' brains to just, chill?
No, it's all of that, Laura. And as anyone listening to the program knows, when you have a child who is deeply into the youth sports thing, and you're traveling around the country or even the state with them, it's more than money. It's what happened to your weekend. You're in your car most of the weekend, and the leisure time that you would have at home or wherever else you might be, you don't have that. If you have two or three children and you're constantly traveling with one child to sports venues, That can be really problematic for families, and I'm sure that there are people listening who can relate to this, where you're focused on one child's sports dreams, and your other children are either kind of tagging along, and you're trying to give them some attention, or you're not with them at all. So there are lots of choices that we're making when we're indulging or at least helping a child, kind of reach their sports dream, and we're spending money on them. And one other point that I would make is that, the more we spend on a child's sports life, it just follows naturally that the more emotionally invested we're going to be in their sports. And I've seen this so many times in the reporting that I've done where, children oftentimes, they reach their mid-teens and they're not really interested in participating in the sport anymore. They've just grown out of it and are interested in doing other things. And because so much money and time has been spent in getting them to this point in that sport, it's very difficult. It's an extremely difficult conversation to have with a parent to say, I'd really like to walk away from soccer or lacrosse or volleyball or whatever it is. So, the more money and time that goes into a child's sports life, I think the more difficult it is for the child to confront the parent and say, I'd really like to try something else.
Let's take another call, and this is Todd waiting in Portsmouth. Hi, Todd. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to call and say both my sons, one's 13, one's 10, played travel baseball and travel soccer. And just as we encourage high performance, with academics, encouraging good grades, honors, AP classes for the older one. We also want to encourage high performance in athletics and everything they do in life. I'm guilty of repeatedly explaining to both my boys that if you're going to do something, in life, whatever it might be, whether it's in the backyard, gardening, playing baseball or doing soccer, you're going give it everything you've got, because why bother doing it otherwise? That's my thought.
Yeah. Todd, let me ask you a question. Okay, so do well in whatever you choose in life, and I hear you on that. But why is it important that they perform at a high level in athletics? Why not just get out there and play and have fun?
I mean, again, it's not just athletics. It's whatever they're shooting for. Athletics is just an extension of that. And to be honest with you, I see it with both my sons and their teammates, that it seems that the kids, and not just their teammates, their peers, that the kids who are performing at the high level at athletics oftentimes are also performing at a high level in academics. And my suspicion is that's generally because of a philosophy within families of, you know, if you're going to do something, do it well.
Okay, Todd, thanks for calling in. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I agree. You certainly want your kids to reach their potential, whatever they're doing, including sports. You know, the point that I would make, and I think that the caller would agree, is that your child, this has to be about your child and what your child wants. And your child has to be having fun. They're not going to be the best they can be if they don't want to be playing a 70-game baseball schedule. And it's really important to the parent. I'm not suggesting in any way that that's Todd's situation. But you see this so often where the parents are really invested in the child playing at the most competitive level, and the kid is ambivalent. And I think, you know, we as parents, we have to be very alert to that. And this is a mistake that I think many of us are vulnerable to making, including myself. In fact, I put a star over my name, where you mistake your ambitions for what's in your child's developmental interest as a sports player and as a person. It's very easy to do.
So if they want to play at that high level, great. But if they don't, let them play in the rec league, or let them, God forbid, not play.
I think you have to operate under the assumption that your child is probably not going to be pitching for Stanford in 15 years or playing in the major leagues. That it could happen, but that's not the greatest plan in terms of, you know, planning on that. So these other values, I think, are so important. You know, you want your kid to love sports and to want to stay in sports forever. And if your child is doing something for you, then they're less likely to develop that passion than if it's really being generated by their own love of being with teammates and just having fun playing the sport. It sounds like a simple idea, but I think we all at some point have gotten away from that and gotten more invested in, hey, you know, the playoffs are coming up, and wouldn't it be really great to beat the Mustangs this year? It should be a kid-centric activity. And, you know, my view is the less that we have to do with the organizing and the way things are set up, typically the better off the kids are.
Let's take another one. Todd, thank you for that one. And this is Mary in Hanover. Hi, Mary. You're on The Exchange. Good morning.
Oh, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a different situation. What do you do when you live in rural New Hampshire where you don't have the travel team options? I mean, I have a little boy that's 8 that will be 9 in the fall that practices baseball 365 days a year. So he practices pitching to a mattress in the basement.
Wow.
When there's snow outside. And so, you know, it's not the situation where I've got a kid that I'm forcing to do something that he doesn't want to do. That's his passion. And he begged me to let him try out for a travel team in Concord. Well, that's an hour and 20-minute drive just to practice.
Sure. So, Mary, where do you live? You live in a rural area, I take it.
In Hanover. You know,
wait, there's no kids baseball leagues in Hanover?
There are, but not a, you know, but it is more like, I guess we have Cal Ripken, but we don't, it's for a variety of baseball levels, and you know, you don't have but 2 levels, so ages third grade through sixth grade.
Well, Mary, let me ask you a quick question, and I'm not criticizing you, okay? Why aren't those local leagues good enough? Why do you need to spend an hour and 20 minutes and all that gas driving to Concord?
Well, it's more of the, you know, I haven't decided that I'm going to do it.
Uh-huh.
But when you have a situation where there's a good proportion of the kids that are playing that don't even want to be there, it gets frustrating when you have a kid that wants to be there.
Who's so excited. Yeah, and Mary, your phone's breaking up, so I'll let you go there. But what do you think about this? She's got a child, Mark, who's absolutely passionate about baseball. I love the description of him practicing 365 days a year. But, boy, that's a toll on her to drive to Concord just for practices. It's a long drive, and it's a lot of gas.
Well, she's doing something right, Laura, because her son is in love with baseball. So whatever Mary has been doing to this point, it's been absolutely the right thing. So that I think, needs to be said. Beyond that, I think just as a rule of thumb, you know, we all need to kind of take a deep breath and slow down. And I can tell you from my personal experience that with my children, when they were 9 and 10, their baseball seasons seemed to be the most important, the outcome of those seasons seemed to be the most important thing when they were that age. And as they got older, you realize that, you know, what was happening in those years was really about just developing a love for the game and learning some of the fundamentals. And all of the serious development goes on much, much later in their childhoods. So my advice to Mary is just keep doing what you're doing. You know, give your child access to baseball through local community leagues. It gets more serious in a hurry. And I don't remember exactly how old her child is, but if he's 9 or 10, he's not missing anything, in my judgment, if he defers travel baseball until he's, you know, 12 or 13 or even in high school.
Interesting. Okay, Mary, thanks a lot for calling in, and good luck with your son. And let's take one more. This is Bea calling in from Elliott, Maine. Hi, Bea. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. Yes, I'd like to, first of all, thank the author, Mark Harmon, for shedding light on these very, very serious issues, in my opinion. And I'm really concerned about our emphasis on competition in our culture, and not wellness and fitness and cooperation. So I've been a teacher for a long time, and I've had two athletic boys go through a couple AAU programs, and it's really amped up over the last few years. So I'm wondering if the author has some suggestions about how to make this shift.
And B, what's AAU programs?
AAU, what does it stand for? It's basically the travel teams.
It is the travel teams, okay.
Right.
And so why did you decide to do that for your sons, given the concerns?
I have a younger son who is now 23, who was, you know, he was the boy who was going to make the major leagues and was, you know, just all the eyes were on him, and he was in love with the game. But then, you know, you hit 15, 16 years old, and the passion starts to wane. My younger son was that kid who, you know, walked around and watched his brother play 65 games in a summer season, felt entitled to his AAU experience.
Yeah, you did it for
it
him, do
it
for me.
Hit.
Sure,
well,
sure.
It takes a huge hit on the family. I'm also a middle school teacher, and I see many students who have these dreams at 13, 14 years old that, you know, I'm going to be in the major leagues. I'm going to get a full scholarship. And it's just not going to happen for most of them.
Well, B, I got to let you go in the interest of time. Thank you so much for calling in. And Mark, your thoughts on B's points.
Well, I'll read her book because those are great points. And you know, again, I think there are no simple answers. There is no one, you know, magic bullet. But it's just a process of thinking through what is it that's really important to you as a parent about your child's life in sports. And if you think that through in a measured way, typically you're going to make great decisions and your kid is going to have a fabulous experience in sports. It's when we get distracted and it starts to be about those, you know, dreams of playing in the Super Bowl, that's when Nike and ESPN and all of those other companies that I write about in the book, they have the upper hand, and you can make some decisions that you might regret down the line.
Well, Mark, it's been great to talk to you. Thank you very much for giving us the hour this morning.
Thank you, Laura. Really appreciate it.
That's Mark Hyman again. His new book is called The Most Expensive Game in Town, The Rising Cost of Youth Sports and the Toll on Today's Families. His earlier book was called Until It Hurts. His forthcoming book this fall is about concussions. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Tim Camerato. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoi, and tomorrow on The Exchange, the age of cyber warfare. The U.S. and other nations, along with terrorists and criminal groups, are increasingly engaged in high-tech espionage and cyber attacks, with an aim at destabilizing communications and other critical infrastructure. We'll discuss the nature of this threat, how it affects both government and the private sector, with two longtime observers of this trend. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange, tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on NHPR. New Hampshire weather for today. Look for it to turn partly sunny. Chance of an isolated shower or thunderstorm. Highs today from 80 to 85 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the Melanson Company of Keenan Bow. 80 years of providing comprehensive roofing solutions, now offering solar energy solutions, including roof integrated systems. Melanson.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord 89.1.
WEVS Nashua 88.3.
WEVH Hanover 91.3.
WEVN Keene 90.7.
WEVC Gorham 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson 99.5.